Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And I realize the clock on the wall says 7:28, but it is in fact 7:31. We'll try to get that fixed by next week. Welcome to the Tuesday, September 25th, 2012, Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. First item on our agenda is a possible rezoning on Alabama Avenue. Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, members of the board, Tina Moon will present the staff report. This was, I think, directed by the board back in June.
Actually, Tina, just before you start, let me just point out that both Alderman Haven O'Donnell and Alderman Coleman are not able to join us tonight. It is the first night, or it is as of sunset this evening, it is Yom Kippur, so they will be back with us next week. And I also meant to mention, I apologize, I just wanted to say a couple of special thank yous. We had about 4,000 people who came into downtown Carrboro this past Friday night to enjoy the Tift Merritt concert. It was a great time. And I know there were a lot of businesses downtown that benefited a bunch from it. So I, as mayor, I would especially like to recognize Frank Heath and his staff and everybody from the Cat's Cradle for their role in making it happen. And also the Town of Carrboro's Public Works Department, Police Department, Parks and Recreation Department, and our Fire Department for keeping us safe during the entire event, and especially our Economic Development Director, Annette Stone, who coordinated all those events. And most importantly, my fellow members of the Board of Aldermen for being so cool as to recognize what a great opportunity it was. So thanks, everybody, for making a really special event this past Friday night. Tina, go ahead.
Good evening, all. This is the first of our two public hearings for tonight, and this one is an opportunity to provide an opportunity for the board to receive public comment on a proposed zoning map amendment to rezone four properties along Alabama Avenue. For those of you who don't drive by this frequently, I thought a couple quick pictures might be helpful to get us all on the same page. As you can tell, this area is a little bit difficult to photograph. The first picture on the top is the Kangaroo kind of quickie mart. This is just kind of our landmark to get us in the right area. The picture here on the bottom, this is actually 100 Alabama. This is what in your staff report I have referred to as the L-shaped property. It doesn't have an address, and it's located right along here. If you take Alabama Avenue here around the corner, you come to this intersection here. This is Jones Ferry. This is Alabama. This is the infamous L-shaped track again, the Morningstar storage areas over here. And if you turn the corner right behind this cluster of trees is this area here, which is 105 Alabama. This is an aerial of that same, those same four properties, which are outlined in orange. Again, here's this is again the Kangaroo, just as kind of your landmark to get you oriented. This is 100 Alabama Avenue, the infamous L-shaped track, 101 and 105 over here. And part of the reason for including the Kangaroo property here is because this series of five tracks or parcels is actually one big kind of B3 cluster. So this is all part of the same zoning district, B3. However, only these four parcels are proposed for the rezoning tonight. This one here will remain, will keep its B3 business classification. Just as a little bit of an overview of how we've reached this point, as I think many of you know in the room, in June, the Board of Adjustment denied a request for a variance for impact for a stream buffer for 100 Alabama, which was the wooded property in the pictures. The applicants subsequently withdrew their application for a special use permit. The variance was part of that overall project. On June 12th, the Board of Aldermen went ahead and set a public hearing, which we're having tonight, to consider rezoning those four tracts. Also at that meeting, the board referred an email from neighbors to staff regarding concerns about the overall special use permit process, and staff is still in the process of fully responding to all of those concerns. And finally, just to be clear, the map amendment, if adopted, would change the zoning classification from the existing commercial classification of neighborhood business to R10, which is a residential district, which is consistent with the rest of the Alabama Avenue neighborhood. Give you a quick comparison of the different zoning districts, and I think many of you are already pretty well aware of these, so I won't go into great detail, but essentially B3 is a kind of a neighborhood commercial district designed to accommodate those needs of that kind of immediate neighborhood. R10 is one of our residential districts. It requires 10,000 square feet per dwelling unit. There are, of course, some commercial uses, and they're outlined in your packet. There's quite a long table there that shows which commercial uses, such as daycares, are permitted in the residential district. This is a little bit of a more in-depth comparison in terms of density. It shows not only the difference of how many square feet per dwelling unit, but also the slight difference in height. You can have a slightly taller building in the R10 district. And there's also a slight shift in the setbacks, mainly in the front setbacks from a right-of-way. So that would increase for the residential district from 15 to 25 feet. It would stay roughly the same for the boundary lines. I find this map a little bit more helpful than the aerial because you can just, with the building footprints, it gives you a better sense of the properties that we're really talking about. And when we're looking at a rezoning, we tend to look at what's the potential shift to the development potential of these different lots. As we can see here, these two properties, which DOT acquired in the 80s to reconfigure Alabama Avenue from this arrangement to this, are really used for that purpose. DOT staff has indicated that they consider that both of these tracts are not developable. And as you can see, 101 really is Alabama Avenue at this point. 105 already has a house on it. The square footage is about a little bit, it's not quite 9,000, so it really couldn't accommodate another dwelling unit regardless of the zoning district. This one here, 100 Alabama, which is the largest undeveloped tract of this cluster, as you can see here from the topography, it has some pretty substantial development constraints just from the topography and the ephemeral stream that kind of crosses here, and there's an associated stream buffer for that property. The things for you all to consider as you deliberate, and the relevant land use ordinance language is included in your packets at the end of the staff memo. Amendments are legislative decisions. You're required to hold a public hearing, which we're having now. Ultimately, the question before the board is whether the change in zoning promotes the public health, safety, and welfare of the whole community. We ask the board to adopt a statement regarding the consistency of the proposal with adopted plans or policies. And, of course, with all legislative items, the board shouldn't be voting on things which you have a personal benefit. In terms of adopted policies, our main policy document is the Carborough 2020. These two policies seem to be the most relevant to this particular project, and they're both under the development classification or development section. 211 speaks to infill development taking place in a manner that fulfills the town's goals and enhances neighboring areas. 2.42 speaks to development through Carborough should be consistent with the town's distinctive character, preserving older neighborhoods, and so forth. The Planning Board considered the rezoning proposal at their September meetings and looked at this in terms of consistency as well, and the Planning Board determined that the proposed rezoning was consistent with the two provisions of the Carborough 2020 document that I just mentioned. And finally, the staff recommendation at the bottom of your abstract is for the board to consider the provisions of 15.324 and 15.325 and can decide whether the amendment advances the public health, safety, and welfare. A resolution of consistency and a draft ordinance has been included in your packet.
Okay. A couple of questions from board members, and then I have a number of people who signed up to speak. Lydia?
Yeah. My question, Tina, is I know DOT's recently reconfigured that intersection. Can you explain what effect that's had on Alabama Avenue or these parcels we're considering?
I think one of the concerns, and there are a member of the planning board vice chairs here to speak to some of the planning board concerns if appropriate, but I think one of the concerns that the planning board spoke of was not having direct access from Jones Ferry Road anymore, that all commercial uses would kind of have to go into the neighborhood as opposed to a direct access here.
And that's because of the topography, the way that the land sort of drops away there. DOT won't allow a driveway directly off of Jones Ferry, is that right?
That was before my time, but that would be my thinking.
Oh, and the distance from the other roads is also
probably. Yeah, that would be the other thing. It might be unlikely that they
would
put in another.
DOT actually owns that frontage, do they not? Isn't that
the, yes, they own,
so, right, because they own that weird little wedge or whatever. So yes. They own the frontage on.
I believe at the time it was zoned B3, somebody correct me if I'm wrong on this, that property did have frontage and now it doesn't.
I see. Okay. All right. I've got about four or five people signed up. So if it's okay with the board, I'm going to go ahead and call on Andrea Fushi. Okay. That's acceptable. Phyllis Bland, if you have some comments.
Good evening. My name is Phyllis Bland. I own the house at 105 Alabama Avenue. Before we get started with new business, I would like to thank all the boards that listened to us and took under consideration Carver Vision 2020 and the guidelines. We appreciate it because for Carver, I want what's best for the residents and everybody. And has had to take the time to say thank you for me and all my family. I'm talking about my neighborhood family. We really appreciate it. Okay, now back to the business. We have a small community. We have no sidewalks, and we aren't complaining about that. We have narrow streets, one Alabama Avenue paved, and one Neville's, which gravels. We have small front yards. Our homes are R10 except mine and the vacant lot and what DOT owns, and that's concrete. We have some concern about having a commercial business in our neighborhood. Number one, our commercial business will destroy our historic community setting dating back to the 50s. A commercial business would be too large for our community. And Carrboro wouldn't be able to maintain Carrboro Vision 2020. And I'm very concerned about our ability to coexist with a commercial business. And my greatest concern is about if we have a commercial business there, some of the families will begin to put up for sale signs and leave. Everything we worked all these years for and what we stand for, and we're a good community, we're good people. Only thing I ask you to do, if it's in the guidelines and it's in a vision, cover vision 2020, to consider it seriously, please. I have just a few more things. I'm concerned with our safety for the children in our neighborhood. With increased traffic, possible crime, residents' driveway, coming in our driveway and turning around when they get congested. Our ability to enter and exit our neighborhood at certain times of day. And I'm also concerned about pedestrians trying to cross John Ferry Road to a commercial business. I know people say you need to think about yourself, but I think we need to think about everyone. The noise, trash trucks, tractor-trailer delivery trucks, vehicles coming and going 7 days a week. And I have some health concerns. It would decrease our ability to walk, jog, bike due to the traffic. We don't have sidewalks, so we use Alabama Avenue and Neville's Road to walk on. Although I don't jog and all that, but we do use it to communicate. We also have, we worry about our ability to sleep. Dusk to dawn lighting every day. It would be just like a little Las Vegas. And next and foremost, we're dealing with the stress. The people who own the building, the commercial building, they are probably somewhere off, probably come visit and leave. The people who run it, they'll go home eventually and come back. The people who patronize that store, they'll come and they'll go back. But we have to stay there. Stay there, and we have no options. All I want to do is, you can put something there. We never said we didn't want anything to be built there. We said put something there where we could all coexist. That's the only thing we ask them to do. We want them to develop that property. That's called progress. But please understand that all we want to do is to be able to maintain our neighborhood and live. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bland. Catherine Adamson, and then Larry Worth.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I just want to say good evening to you, Board of Aldermen, and to the audience, and also to the town staff. I'm here to read into the record of a petition with 26 signatures, which the town clerk also has a copy of, and I believe will be included in the packets. It says, we, the undersigned, support the move by the Board of Aldermen to rezone the properties at 100, 101, 103, and 105 Alabama Avenue, Carborough, as well as the infamous L-shaped tract, from B3 to R10. We feel that the allowable uses included in the R10 zone are more appropriate for the residential naturehood of the properties than the previous B3 uses, which allowed large business and retail uses. R10 uses would provide a comfortable, healthy, safe, and pleasant environment and be in harmony with our neighborhood. Thank you.
All right. That's a record. Go ahead.
I just want to make sure that everybody's aware of the other uses that are allowed in R10.
Including, I believe, elder care centers, daycare centers.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Art center, I think.
Right. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that when people are saying that that's okay, mm-hmm. that 2 years from now a daycare center won't get. I don't mean that meanly. I just mean I just want to make sure people know that it's more than simply residential dwelling units.
Obviously, I can't speak for all of the undersigned, but my understanding is that we've been pretty clear about what the other uses are. We've been over the permitted uses table quite a bit in the course of this process.
Just making sure we're covered.
Learned more than you ever wanted to know about the table.
And we've also suggested in the past that something like an elder care center, a daycare center, or, you know, I understand that even quite large residential dwellings are permitted under R10 zoning, and that's fine with me, and as far as I know, fine with the other undersigned.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie, for being clear. All right, Larry Worth.
Good evening. first off, I want to thank the board for denying Stonerk, because that would have been a disaster. I had a stroke and a heart attack a few years back, and it would have about killed me to have that stress on that block.
Yeah.
And I just was paralyzed just recently. And it would have been very stressful for me. And by you zoning that back to residential helps me out tremendously. And a lot of our other neighbors, which are elderly, most of us are elderly. I look young, but I'm 60 years old, and I'm retired. I had to retire young because I had a stroke. And I'm behind stress. I guess it was. That's where it came from. But anyway, thank you for denying Stonerk. And hopefully you can make this residential. Because I first suggested that at the beginning, that it was rezoned business, and it shouldn't have been. They said it was grandfathered in. I said, this has to be changed. How could that be grandfathered in and still business? As small as this block is, there's no way it should be business. This is it's just barely a resident. It's so small, 10 houses on that whole block. And they have a big truck, it's about as big as a house, coming on that little bitty block. So it would have been very disturbing. You know, and, like I mentioned before, my grandmother owned all the land. And she allotted it off to each one years when I was a little boy. The house I live on now was given to me by my mother, which my grandmother, which owned the land, gave it to my mother, and she gave it to me. And so I go way back on the land. I grew up on the land. And my neighbors mostly knew my grandmother. And I'm just happy to say thank you for giving us that land back, giving us our neighborhood back, and making sure that we don't have this business coming from way somewhere else, destroying our neighborhoods. I mean, I lived in the city for a long time before I came back down here. I said, I want to come down here and retire at my home. I certainly didn't want to come back down here and have Mack trucks in front of my house and a big dumpster right in front of my door. That would have been a total disaster. And again, I thank you. I just hope we can get this to residential so we can go back to our living as a nice, peaceful neighborhood. I want to thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Thank you.
All right. I have two questions for the staff. I don't know if any other board members do, but Tina, did you mention? I think I must have missed it. If you did, what's the size of that lot at 100 Alabama Avenue, approximately?
It's just under an acre. I think the GIS is 0.94. I think the SUP said 0.91. So
something close to 40,000 square feet.
Yeah.
So at R10, they might be able to build four. Somebody might be able to build up to four dwelling units on that lot. Is that right? Now, as I look at that, I'm going to make sure we're real clear about what we're talking about here, because as I look at that, you know, there's clearly that area kind of in the southwest corner where the land is very low, and it leads a bit steeply down into there. I don't want to hold up this process any longer than it has already taken, but I want to ask the question, you know, Does that really make sense? Because couldn't a developer come in and say, well, I'm going to put, you know, let's say like four townhouses all the way up at the north end of that lot, because it's 40,000 square feet and I have a right to build one for every 10,000 square feet under R10 zoning?
Well, Marty is here to if I get into the nitty-gritty, but I think the short version is it could be an exempt subdivision for three dwelling units. And I have another slide if you really want to get into this that shows some of the drawings that Stronach put together for their special use permit that shows the stream with the approximate buffer to kind of give you a visualization. But essentially, this L-shaped area here could be developed. You'd have to access the front portion probably through here, but you could put something in the back. So in theory, you could probably put three dwelling units in without kicking in the open space recreation requirements. Should you go to four dwelling units, which based on density you could do, the natural constraints would kick in. And so then suddenly you might have, it might be a little bit more challenging.
So it sounds like as a practical matter, probably three dwelling units is about all that somebody could put on there. But again, the point I'm trying to get at is that, you know, if you can see the two, there's two different dark contour lines that show up more prominently on that illustration. The area inside of the lower of the southwestern one probably basically could not be built upon,
yeah.
Or anyway, you'd be crazy to build down in that part of it. Mm-hmm. So if somebody came in and proposed to build three dwelling units, and that probably is at some point what will happen, because the folks who own that are trying to get as much money as possible, understandably, but they're trying to get as much money as possible as they can for in trying to sell it, then all three of those dwelling units are going to be kind of pushed as far north on that lot as possible, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. This is just real quick. This gives you a better sense of the topography. Here's that little ephemeral stream here. Gives you a little sense of the curve. Here it is again here.
Yeah, it really drops away quite dramatically from,
yeah.
from Jones Ferry Road there.
I might just add one thing for purposes of the discussion, and as I understand it, trying to understand kind of what might be the most intensive use of the land. The potential is there to put the four units in one building, i.e. a multifamily type structure. And yes, you're correct that it likely would end up on the north end of the lot. The other thing I would add is at four, through the affordable housing density bonus, you could potentially end up with six. I don't know that they could get that parked, but again, just to understand the most intensive possibility.
Okay, but honestly, that seems a little bit unlikely based upon my experience. But and did you say that y'all looked at what a three lot subdivision might look like on that?
I don't think we didn't, unless Tina, you did something I don't know. We didn't actually sketch
okay,
one
you
out.
Didn't sketch
anything.
One out. Okay.
It just seemed like a logical possibility.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And
go
just
ahead.
Follow up. And Marty, the building height is actually going to be a little higher with this new zoning, right? It could potentially be.
That's correct.
Okay.
35 feet.
Okay. So and yeah, don't go anywhere because I want to switch gears and look at Mrs. Bland's house for just a second and just ask a question. So now her lot is something like 9,000 square feet, I think I heard Tina say.
8,700 and some odd.
Okay, so and we're, if we adopt what's before us, we're going to change the zoning district to R10 on that lot. So here's my question is, I mean, obviously the lot is already built out. It has one existing house on it, and that should be fine. But what are the possible implications for the Bland family of having a lot that's less than 10,000 square feet in a zoning district that requires 10,000 square feet as a minimum? Does that in any way prevent her from doing an addition on her house, or some future owner doing an addition on the house, or that kind of thing?
Yeah, I'm sitting here pondering that as you speak, and I don't want to speak incorrectly, so I should probably look at the ordinance or have, looks like Mike might be doing that as we speak. It would become a non-conforming lot with respect to the size. The fact that there's a home there, obviously it's developed, so it wouldn't have any immediate impact. And our ordinance does allow for removal and replacement of a single-family home on non-conforming lots, so in general terms, it doesn't have much in the way of implications, but perhaps Mike can speak to the enlargement of a single-family home in that situation. I just don't want to say the wrong thing.
It can be enlarged. Our regulations with respect to non-conforming single-family homes are pretty lax. You can, you know, if it burns down, it can be rebuilt, it can be enlarged. So I don't think it's a constitutes a substantial.
It makes sense to make it R10 because the whole rest of the neighborhood is R10, and that, I mean, that's an appealing notion. I'll just point out, though, it seems like the neighborhood was actually developed at something that was closer to the R7.5 zoning district. R7.5 has a little bit smaller setback requirements, as I recall, than R10. The house just to the north of that one at whatever that is, 107 or 109 there, looks, for example, not that this is definitive, but on that image right there, it looks like it's very close to the property line. Mrs. Bland's house does not seem to be especially close to the property lines. But I'm just trying to think in terms of, I don't want to sort of set the Blands up for some big surprise in the future.
What concern do you have? I can answer.
Well, I guess I'm just trying to make sure that your rights are not going to be, as far as using it as a residence, are not going to somehow be limited.
If it will be a resident in my will and my betterhead and my son, that house will not be sold, and on the way that house leaves, that it's the storm going to come back. Break it down, and we're
going to
rebuild.
Okay.
Well, she wants an addition.
Okay. Well, I was thinking, in terms of maybe if you wanted to do an addition at some point.
That's a 0.21 acre lot.
Okay.
That's a small 0.21.
Okay.
What can you put there? Not
a whole lot more.
Not even a debt, really.
Okay. All right. If you're comfortable, I'm comfortable. I just
want to
make
sure.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. What if I need to sign?
All right. Okay. All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, I just wanted to make sure we kind of explored those two issues. Is there a motion for maybe the resolution of consistency?
Sure. I'll move the resolution of consistency.
Second. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously.
Move the ordinance amending the zoning map.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded for the ordinance amending the zoning map. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
Go have fun.
Before we leave this topic entirely, I just want to recognize, I guess for whatever reason, she could not be here tonight, but I think it's worth recognizing that y'all's neighbor, Anissa McClendon.
She was here.
Oh, she is here. She's hiding out back there. But anyway, she's...
Hey, Anissa.
Anyway, Anissa, thank you for all that you have done for your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Appreciate you. She kept on this issue, and it has paid off in the long run. So we appreciate it. Ms. McClendon is a former town employee of the town of Carrboro and a real leader of the Alabama Avenue neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you.
We got a big
great
thing.
That's right.
That was easy because there was no objection.
I know. Yeah.
All right.
Now, will you all come back some night?
I was going to ask them, but they didn't.
When people are mean to us.
All right. Okay. That was easy.
That was easy.
All right. Item 8-2, Board of Aldermen review of master sign plan for 300 East Main Street. Mr. Manager.
Okay. Mr. Marty's going to give the staff report for this one, Mr. Mayor.
Good evening. I have a relatively brief presentation, and the applicant is here to answer any questions you may have. So technically, this is a public hearing. The way the ordinance was amended for the master sign plan does require a public hearing. I guess so, yeah.
It's not really clear whether it needed to get sworn in, but we might as well. It doesn't hurt. Everybody's going to tell the truth anyway.
solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge? Please.
Okay. So it's a public hearing for master sign plan for 300 East Main Street, Phase 1. First, I'm just going to walk you through some of the numbers, and then we have plenty of pictures to view as you wish to do so and discuss. The signage allotment, as the ordinance would provide for under normal circumstances without this master sign plan, you end up with 148 square feet, and that represents the street frontage for the portion of the project in front of the hotel, essentially. The amount of street frontage there, you run through the formula and ordinance, and you end up with 148 square feet. The requested signage allotment per the application in front of you is 502 square feet, approximately a 340% increase. And examples of the signs that make up the square footage there, they are requesting 24 square feet of signage for each tenant space, up to 12 tenant spaces, totaling 288 square feet. There's also a Hampton Inn double-sided blade sign, and again, I'll get to some visual pictures of these. 84 square feet, that's 42 square feet per side. Parking direction sign at Boyd Street, 17 square feet. A Hampton Inn and parking sign combined along at the Lloyd Street intersection at 23 square feet. A big P on the deck at 25 square feet that you can see from Main Street, and then additional parking symbol and 300 East Main logo signs on the deck itself at 84 square feet. For purposes of analysis, we did consider Paget Lane. We just kind of ran the numbers here. This was an idea that had come up earlier in the discussions between staff and the applicant, the possibility of a text amendment that would allot signage as if Paget Lane, which it's actually just a driveway, just Paget Lane is kind of the historical reference for it. And if you follow the same formula that the ordinance provides for signage and looked at the frontage in the project along that road, you end up with 355 feet approximately, which equates to 201 square feet of signage. And this is essentially the side of the hotel that faces into what ultimately in the long term would be the courtyard area and other buildings in the project. So if you looked at it that way, you end up with a total allotment of 349 square feet, and that's about 144% increase, difference of 153 square feet. And I have, I'm going to just run through these. I also have color ones here on Elmo if you want to see the color version and zoom in on it or anything of that nature. So this first drawing is East Main Street. If you were standing on Main Street looking at the hotel, there are six spaces shown. Let me make clear that the way the application is set up, what you're viewing and ultimately deciding whether to approve is what I'll call a template. It's not intended to represent exactly what the signs will be shaped like, what the fonts would represent. They want to maintain flexibility in that regard. So this is just showing as an exhibit what 24 square feet, and they've shown most of them as just kind of a rectangular shape, but that represents the signage at 24 square feet. So what actually we will end up with there, if it is approved, remains to be seen. If the sign is projecting from the wall and therefore considered as a double-sided sign, the maximum size per side would be 12 square feet, if that makes sense.
Does maintaining maximum flexibility mean that each tenant or business has the ultimate decision as to what the sign would look like?
The way the ordinance is set up right now, those signs, individual sign permits, would go through our normal process, which does involve taking them before the appearance commission for a review. But yes, ultimately, it is a by right at that point. The appearance commission often comments on them, but Right. Yeah, they can't say, no, you cannot do that. Okay, and down below, this is, again, if you're in the courtyard facing the hotel, parking deck would be to the rear here. They've shown 1, 2, 3, 4 spaces on this side. This is the blade sign, and I feel like maybe I should go ahead and switch to the color. especially for this one, to get a better idea. Yes. Where's that blade sign? Here. So here's the blade sign, and
which button do I hit to switch back and forth?
Both of them. Thank you. And then down at the bottom, you see a location for the blade sign. This is, again, as if you're in the court, in the project courtyard area, looking at the hotel. This is the curved part of the building. Main Street is here. This is the proposed location for the blade sign.
So that's a two-story sign. Is that right? Those are two stories?
Basically about two stories.
Approximately.
It's a two-story sign.
Yes, approximately.
That's kind of big.
And here's a representation of the parking sign. Let me back up. That's the one at Boyd Street. This is the one at Lloyd, which is combined Hampton Inn and parking sign. Here's the parking deck. If you're facing Main Street, obviously the hotel sits in front of the parking deck, but this P is what I'm trying to represent here. You can see it from Main Street. And here are the additional signs on the parking deck itself, the P and then the logo on either side of it at this location and this location. This last slide is, again, back at Boyd Street. You'll see a Hampton Inn monument sign here. We determined through the review of the materials that technically, by land use ordinance definition, this Hampton Inn sign is an off-premise sign, so there's no authority as we're sitting here tonight to approve that sign. The applicant requested that we leave it in here just in case there's any feedback or discussion about the concept of having a sign there. But the way the ordinance is written currently, there's not an ability to approve it tonight. And again, I have all of what you've seen in color. If you wish to see any of what I just went through. Otherwise, I'm happy to answer any questions, and I believe the applicant wishes to make a few comments.
Let's go ahead. I have, in addition to the applicant, I have two members of the public signed up to speak. Let's go ahead and hear from the applicant and from the members of the public, and then we'll maybe field some questions from the Board of Aldermen. Come on up.
I'll get out of the way for a moment, but I forgot to mention as a reference, I do have the site plan as well. If there's any confusion about where the signs are located,
leave that up.
Leave it up?
Okay. Actually, I think I only have one member of the public. You are Mr. Farmer, are you not?
Yes, sir.
All right, Woody Farmer. That's the one.
Yes, sir.
That's Mr. Farmer.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
I do.
Thank you.
I just wanted to, if I could, just point out our concept here, and I don't know how to use a pointer, so I'm not going to. This sign has been determined to be a off-premises sign, and even though we have built this major access road and this will be the primary entrance, it was not part of the original CUP proposal. We are going to request either we add that into the CUP proposal or that you amend the ordinance to allow an off-premises sign if approved within the CUP proposal. The main reason is most people come from Chapel Hill, I have to know to take a left there to go down, come through the parking deck, and turn into our hotel. They cannot take a left turn up here because that's a right in, right out. If we don't do that, we've built that road for no reason. In fact, we'd probably just petition to leave it closed. Because everybody would have to come in down here and circle through this shopping center, which means all the traffic has to come through your downtown before it can get back into the hotel. The other little, we have a small hotel sign here designed to catch people coming this way or this way, and that will be a stoplight. And then the blade sign we propose to put here, it really will be available to people on Main Street. This will eventually be a five-story building, so you really won't see that sign from anywhere except right there in front. The parking signs, they were going to put here and here, and there's one here I don't think is covered by the ordinance because it faces no public street. The idea is to try to get some smooth traffic flow in here. When we met with the Appearance Commission, when we met with you all, we heard loud and clear that you did not want a fifth-story sign. You did not want to be known as Hampton Inn and Suites instead of Carver. Okay, so we have taken both of those signs off, but we're trying to make sure we have adequate identification for what will be one of the major businesses in town. The blade sign is a very narrow sign. It's two stories tall, but it will not be interior lit. It will be painted on a surface and lit by lights consistent with your ordinance. I don't know if that means they go up, down, sideways, or what, but there is some way they have to go so as not to create light pollution. But it will be very non-dramatic sign for that reason. In other words, it's not an interior lit neon thing. The rest of it, we've tried to listen to everyone and do as well as we can. I'm going to let Laura speak to the retail signs. But under all those numbers that you looked at, if you take out the parking sign, a little directional parking sign here, just take out those signs. And if you take out the retail, the hotel is only asking for 110 square feet, which was less than what was previously allowed. Even if you add the retail together at 288, you end up with 298 square feet, which is less square footage, the staff testified, than if allowed if you considered Pageant Lane a street. So, you know, it's those other little parking deck signs, which I believe you want as much as us to get people in there, and a substantial portion of that 500 and some feet we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, sir.
The planning board recommended considering coordinating with the town standard for parking information. So in that way, you'd be able to...
I'm going to let Laura speak to that.
Parking, okay.
Okay. So my only, I'm just speaking to the hotel signs.
So the sign that, in the scenario that you want, it's going to say Hampton Inn where? It's going to say Hampton Inn on the blade.
It's going to have a little dinky one right here about that big.
And then
we want one here.
The so-called monument up there.
Yes, and this one here, if you'll allow us to add that as part of our CUP plan, and then allow off-site signs as part of that, that right there is a consistent size with this one right here, which is a pizza place,
mm-hmm.
and consistent with the church sign, which is right here.
Okay.
And I think we're going to talk the church into dressing up their property by taking out that fence and putting in something a little more attractive there.
That'd be nice. And so what as far as what Hampton Inn, with the signs that would say Hampton Inn, what does all of that add up to? Do you know square feet?
If we get that one, it's 110 square feet. If you
So 110 is not just the blade, but it's the blade and the other two?
Yes, the blade is 84. This one is 10 square feet. And this one, including the parking directional sign, is 16. If you take that out, this is about 5.
Okay.
So we're down to less than 100 square feet.
Okay. All right. I think that's all the questions I have for you, Mr. Farmer. Anybody else? Okay, we may call you back.
Just for information, what the staff had concluded was that a sign that sort of said generically either, you know, parking this way or hotel parking this way, but that didn't have the Hampton logo would be consistent with what we have now, but that if you wanted to have the Hampton sign, it would become really an off-premises commercial sign and would require an amendment.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's
and right now, off-premises commercial signs are just not allowed in Carver at all. Is that right?
That's right. No. And what would allow you to have the hotel Sciences Hotel generically, or parking that way, would be that that would be a sign erected, a directional sign erected by or on behalf of governmental authorization, so it would be exempt. It would
be more like just a general wayfinding.
It would be like a lot of cities you see signs that say parking down the block, right. You know, that kind of sign.
All right. Laura, do you want to follow that up? Come on up.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Thanks.
I just wanted to clarify a couple things. One, in general, we've tried with this proposal to be responsive to comments we've gotten from the members of the Board of Aldermen, the advisory boards, and the town staff. And it certainly is, I think, dramatically different from what we started out with a few months ago. Let me clarify one thing Marty mentioned about the retail signs. The representation we showed up there is the maximum amount of signage you would have. The way our request is actually worded is that each tenant would have 24 square feet per side they face. So if they were on a corner, they'd get a sign on each side. But if a tenant takes, for example, two bays or even more, which is very likely, they wouldn't get double the signage. They would just still get one sign facing each side. So when we showed them those pictures of the 24 square feet signs, that was the most signs and the largest possible signs you would see on those two sides of the building. So if someone did a double-sided sign, it'd be smaller. If someone took a couple spaces, they would only have one of those signs and one of them would go away.
And how big are each of those bays approximately, if you know?
They vary. The smallest one is 850 square feet. I think the biggest one is about 3,500 square feet.
Okay.
Just from the folks we have who are likely to go in that space, so far I know there are at least two possibilities right now of combining spaces. So we are showing actually 9 storefronts, and in all likelihood it's really going to be more like 6 or 7 tenants. So the signage would be reduced. So that, like I said, that picture is just, that's the most signage you would have. We think the proposal is reasonable, as Woody pointed out, as the staff pointed out to the planning board. If you do take out a lot of that, the directional signage around the periphery, the sign that's remaining for the retail and for the hotel are very consistent with what is allowed in the rest of downtown, especially if you count the frontage on Paget Lane, which I think is in the spirit with the ordinance that applies to the rest of downtown. And I think this development is unique in needing more of that kind of remote signage, if you will, just because a lot of folks have mentioned the Franklin Hotel and the Siena Hotel is not having a whole lot of signage all over the place. This project, both the parking and the hotel entrance, are nowhere near the street. So to get people in, you really need some kind of signage to the street, or people are going to get confused. Local folks will figure it out eventually. Hotel, obviously, most of their business is not local. They have new people coming in every night. It's a little more difficult for them to figure that out. So I think our needs here are a little bit unique from some of the examples that others have cited. Let me just see what else. I think most of the stuff Marty or Woody covered. As Marty mentioned, as Woody mentioned, we would like to get your feedback on the monument sign. That was done there in lieu of the sign on the fifth floor to get people in. So if we could, we'd like to get some feedback just to see whether or how we should pursue the possibility of some other way of doing that, because we recognize you can't do that tonight. And lastly, to mention address Sammy's issue about the planning board and the parking signage. Damon will correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding of the planning board is they kind of want to more generic signs directing people into the parking deck, since it is public parking for the first 5 years of the Carbo's lease. And we have a couple issues with that. One, it is a 5-year lease. It's not going to be a public parking deck forever. So we don't want people to be confused and think this is a Town of Carbo parking deck now and forever. It's going to make it very difficult someday when that parking gets restricted to tenants of 300 East Main. And secondly, it's important to us to brand the development as 300 East Main. We want to make it very clear there is public parking there. And if that requires maybe some additional signage or advertising or whatever, we're certainly willing to do that. We have no problem with it, but it's not just a public parking deck, and people already come up to me all the time and say, oh, so Carver is building you a parking deck, and I just say, I wish.
I just wonder if you would have said that back when you were before us asking us for your help in building the parking deck.
Would have said?
If you would have said the same thing about the signage, that it's only for 5 years and you don't want people thinking that it's Carver. I wonder if you would have made that argument then.
I'm not sure.
I'm sure you don't. I think I would really like us to go with the planning board's recommendation. As you know, this project and the projects coming afterwards are huge. The impact's huge. We're trying to minimize the aesthetic impact on Carrboro. And these are small ways of minimizing huge aesthetic impact on Carrboro. And I'd hate to see us nickel and dime it.
I understand that. I would argue that our parking signs are pretty generic. I mean, we're talking about a circle with a P in it. It's not like we've got some fancy, proprietary parking sign. I think if Carrboro were to do a sign, it'd be similar. And we've got the P is here mainly so people from the street or wherever know generally which direction to go to find the parking deck, and then once they get somewhere close to that, then they can find the entrance. We show the logo on either side there. The logo is not that important, but it is important for us to brand the shopping center. I mean, we're spending $5 million on that parking lot. We're proud of it.
Exactly, and wouldn't be building it without our help. So I think the idea that, we want everybody to be aware that they're only here for 5 years and then they're out. That's kind of, I don't think you would have said that.
Well,
anyway.
No, I'm not trying to send that message. What I'm trying to do is simply, what I don't want people to think is that this, when they drive in there, and if it's only a generically marked parking deck, I just think it creates some confusion as to what this deck is for. This deck has sort of serves three purposes. It serves parking for the hotel, parking for the customer at 300 East Main, and the public parking. And the latter two are really totally on equal footing. There's not going to be, this is the public parking, this is the 300 East Main parking. It's all thrown in there together. Mm-hmm. The hotel does have some dedicated parking because they have guests showing up late at night who need it. So everyone's treated equally in the deck. And it is a public parking deck. It's also a private parking. I mean, it's a hybrid deck.
Yeah.
Let me suggest we hear from Damon Sales.
Thank you.
Damon, you. And then we'll field some questions from members of the board.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge?
Thanks. Hi there. I'm Dan Siles. I'm one of the vice chairs of the planning board. Jackie mentioned you have our recommendation in front of you, I assume. I just wanted to highlight a couple of points in that recommendation. The first is that we generally agree with the applicants about this notion that Paget Lane should be, for the purposes of the signage square footage, considered a frontage. It seems to make sense. It makes sense with the type of development this is. It makes sense with the way that property is going to be used. And so we didn't have too much of a problem with increasing the square footage in that manner. We were a little surprised upon second viewing on the 11th of September, no, the 20th of September, to see the new blade sign, because that was not in the plan that we were shown originally and which we based our comments on. So that's why the comment about the blade sign is a little tacked on there. We were all adamantly opposed to the use of the blade sign, and we also referred you at the end of our recommendation to what is a narrative version of the design guidelines for downtown. Mm-hmm. If you've read the design guidelines for downtown, you know that there are several tables in that document, and parts of those tables address signage. And for that part of the downtown, it expresses certain kinds of preferences for signage, and it also recommends that the board discourage the use of certain types of signage. That blade sign would not be consistent with those guidelines. So I just wanted to point out why we thought that was important. And I can also answer any other questions about the planning board's recommendation, but those were some important ones.
And Damon, the other signs on the corners, were those the Hampton Inn ones, were those okay by the planning board, essentially?
The directional signs,
Hampton Inn ones.
Okay. The monument signs?
So we did talk about the monument sign in the original original plan that they came with, because at that time we didn't know yet that wasn't going to be allowed because it was off the site. And so we did give some feedback to the applicants about small little aesthetic change to that sign, but in general we thought it made sense to have that there. Like, I don't know your name, but as you mentioned, that there's another similar sign for another business right next door that's just like it, and it seemed to be consistent with what they wanted to do. So,
thanks, Dan.
Sure.
One last one. As for the other advantage for using town parking signs, it seems, from what I understand here, that it means there could be more signs, for one, and two, that we wouldn't have to do an exception.
I mean, I think one of the ideas we had in recommending the use of the more generic municipal parking wayfinding sign was that you then wouldn't have to think about it in terms of the allocation of square footage to this site. You could think about it about, well, where did the town think it makes sense to put these directional signs in partnership with the applicant, of course. But it would get you out of having to think about those signs in that way. And also, we just thought it was a nicer option than the sort of designed parking signs, which, and I totally understand Laura's point about the importance of the branding of the parking deck and all that. But we thought there were some benefits to using a more generic approach. But that was, again, that wasn't a huge a huge part of the discussion. So,
okay.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Lydia.
Yeah, I have actually a question from Laura, for Laura. And it is with regard to the blade sign. And but just, you can go on up if you want. But just in general, too, your question about all these different sites and the monument sign, I don't have any problem with any of it. I think it's all fine, and I understand your rationale. But my question, though, is about the blade sign because, again, like I think all of us, it's the first time we heard about the blade sign or saw it. And, for example, I'm a liaison on the Appearance Commission, and I'd really be interested in hearing what they have to say about the blade sign.
Yeah, it was actually in response to, and Woody could address this better because I was out of town and wasn't at the first joint board's review meeting, but it was a response to I believe they had some concern about pedestrians trying to locate the hotel, is my understanding. I hope I'm describing that correctly.
Yeah, well, I was at that meeting. I remember I was more in the context of something on the door, for example, but not necessarily.
And they are going to have a decal sign on the door, which is not subject to the ordinance, so it's not
right.
Visible.
So all I'm saying is that if you're referring to that comment, that's what they're referring to, that the door should have something, not necessarily that there be a blade sign.
Right, because I noticed in your notice to us that it did seem, someone seemed to say that advisory board members were worried about the signage, and so I took that as a response to that.
Yeah, that's where the idea came from, and the only other thing I point out with the blade sign, I think, and again, Woody can better speak to this than I can, I think they're open to any suggested alternatives. The thinking was that this is, the hotel is probably going to be the largest single business in downtown Carrboro, and other than some signs that, you know, 100, 200 feet away from it pointing you to the general direction of it, it doesn't have any signs on it at all except for a decal on the front door. And is that adequate for when people are trying to find this large thing and people are coming from out of town? And that's, I mean, obviously that's your question to answer, but if you don't like the blade sign, if you think something else might be more appropriate, please suggest it. I think that Woody and his partners would be very open to it.
Because I know the material says it's 84 square feet.
Right. That's double-sided, so it's 42. Or half, yes, 40%.
But it's two stories tall.
Yeah, I think just offhand, I think my sentiment is it seems a little
too
bit
large. Yeah.
People tend to find the Carolina Inn without a similar thing.
You know, it strikes me, and
people find the university.
If the staff could come back up for just a minute. So. Thinking of some other commercial property in downtown Carrboro, like I don't know, like the building where the Table organization is located on Weaver Street, for example, the size of the sign in front of that building is related to the amount of street frontage that they have, right?
That's correct.
And that's true. That's just how the ordinance as a whole, I've never even read that part of our ordinance, but that's how the ordinance as a whole is constructed. And the sign ordinance in Carrboro was probably drafted, I don't know, 20 years ago or something like that?
More than that.
1980. 32 years ago.
I was young then.
So it strikes me that part of the problem here is the fact that the ordinance was really drafted to address commercial properties that were 1 to 2 stories or potentially as much as 3 stories, but that in the meantime we've changed the ordinances with respect to certain zones to allow buildings that are up to 5 stories. And in a building where the ground floor is commercial and the upper parts are all residential, that probably didn't really matter because you're still talking about one story of commercial development. But that at 300 East Main Street, what we're dealing with is a five-story commercial building with potentially a whole lot of different businesses in it. And I guess my point being that then, you know, you have this ordinance that sort of pretends that it's only a story or two of development on the lot, and yet in reality, we're looking at like five stories of development. And seems to me that is fundamentally where that's kind of at the root of where some of this issue is coming from. That we're now allow for a much more intense, in certain places, we allow for a much more intense type of commercial development than was the case 32 years ago when the ordinance was drafted.
I think that's a fair summary, yes, and if anyone here can jump in if I mischaracterize or if my memory is wrong on this, but when this issue arose, I guess, in the spring, there was some discussion of whether we should just go with a whole new approach, so to speak, that recognizes some of what you're saying. I think with regard to what you have in front of you tonight, it seems to, the amendment that was adopted seems to work well, seems to fit their needs, if you determine it's worthy of approval. I might mention that as the other buildings come online in the future, it's conceivable that this may need to be revisited again. Ultimately, the way the master sign plan approach has been set up, you have the authority to approve later phases as you see fit. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that some of those later buildings may have multi-story commercial, and you know the one we have in front of us tonight only imagines first-story tenants, so the overall number of signs they're requesting is somewhat limited by that. So there may be some second and third, you know, upper story.
I follow your point about that, but on the other hand, you know, I mean, the nature of a hotel is such that even though the hotel is occupies basically whatever 80% of that building, the nature of a hotel is that most of the people who are coming there are not from around here.
Right.
So it does present some special considerations. And I have to say, I went out to L.A. this summer and had the experience of being able to unable to find a hotel that I was looking for and unable to find the parking deck, even though it was right next to the hotel. And, you know, after a long day of airplane flights and rental car companies and everything else, that can be pretty infuriating experience to have. I don't know what the exact solution is here, but I have. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah,
I have a couple of thoughts for the Board of Aldermen. One is that it, regardless of whether the parking directional signs are done in a style that's consistent with the rest of our parking signs or not, that it doesn't exactly seem right to kind of hold the parking directional signs against the developer when counting toward what the cap is. It does seem to the extent that part of those parking signs are essentially ads for the businesses there, it does seem right to count that square footage. But the part that just says P and an arrow or something, it doesn't seem quite right to count that. I'm open to some discussion about the size of that blade sign. I think in some ways it's an attractive sign. I mean, conceptually it works okay for me. It's kind of cool. I kind of like it in a way. I'm not sure quite yet about the size of it or whatever, but I kind of like that sign. But I have a lot of reservations about the notion of approving that blade sign without our appearance commission having had a chance to weigh in on that particular aspect of it. And I guess maybe that was probably it.
And I don't see why it needs to be that big.
Well,
and that's something for the appearance.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing is I would really like to hear back from them about it before coming to some kind of final conclusion about it personally.
Because I almost felt when I read the report that the appearance commission had recommended a two-story blade sign, and so it was interesting to hear from Sammy that wasn't what had happened. So,
and I remember what my third point was, which is maybe under some technical reading of the ordinance, the monument sign is constitutes something that's off-site. But I mean, I think,
yeah.
You know, I'm not sure how we need to modify the rules or what exactly we need to do about that, but. It seems to me that that's not really the intention of the community.
Can I speak to one point?
Yes, sir. Come on up to the mic so people at home can hear you.
We are more than happy to go back before the appearance commission. It really was in response to their comments that we created the blade sign. And some of it was, is there anything on the entranceway? And what can you see down the alleyway that lets you know it's a hotel? And this is what our expert recommended to us. I did not know they were not going to meet again with the planning board to review the amended proposal. And so apparently we amended the proposal. They didn't meet again. So the planning board does. So I think it's entirely appropriate that we go back through them and discuss the size and possibly moving it down some and that kind of thing and work, see if we can work out an adjustment that would help people on that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thanks for clarifying. You weren't trying to trick us or anything.
Mr. Mayor, if it's sort of the consensus or the sense of the board that that off-premises sign be allowed with a logo, we can. It wouldn't take much to craft an amendment that is fairly specific and would not open up Pandora's box if that's, I mean, if you don't have any problem with the concept, but it does, I think, need an amendment to make sure that it doesn't open that box, because there's a lot of folks who'd like to say, you know,
right.
Joe's Pizza right down the street or...
Yeah, and I guess the point I would make is I would almost say if there's some kind of amendment to be drafted there that it would make sense to me to limit that amendment to this particular land use of hotel because of the fact that some additional wayfinding is sort of logically needed for people who are looking for
a distinction that could certainly be drafted in there, and it wouldn't be much. And I think if that amendment... moves slower than your approval of the sign, you could probably approve the sign subject to approval of the amendment, so they would know it would be coming.
Okay. Something
we
like that.
We could do that procedurally.
Okay.
I guess I have one question. You know, in the planning board's comment on the parking sign, implied is the question of where the most appropriate place would be for parking. So I'd be interested in hearing from town staff what, I mean, to me it seems like the places where the applicants put the signs make sense, but I just want to hear from staff to see if that's also the sense.
Yeah, for the most part, I would defer to what Woody, Mr. Farmer said earlier that let me put this back down. The general notion is to, for traffic coming from Chapel Hill, is to pull them off of the main thoroughfare before they get into mm-hmm. all of this. Plus, he also mentioned earlier, this is a ride-in, ride-out, so if they do make it past this, they're going to end up all the way down here. And so in general, those do seem like logical locations.
And there's no left-turn storage, is that right? Even after this is built, there's no left-turn storage going in at opposite Lloyd Street, is that right? You see what I'm saying?
Here.
I mean, in other words, to wait to turn left into the parking, into 300 East Main Street at the intersection of Lloyd and Main, if you're westbound right there,
right.
You're blocking a lane of traffic while you're waiting to make that left turn. Is that right?
I help me out here, Trish. I believe there is a turning lane, a dedicated turning lane, isn't there? Or am I?
It's a shared.
Street, shared.
But it will have a protected left arrow.
It has a protected
and green straight arrow.
Okay, but
yes, it will
but there will be some circumstances where somebody is sitting there waiting to turn left into there, which is the case now, actually, too.
Yes.
I'm not pointing that out to say it's the end of the world, but just to say it's a really kind of an extra pain when somebody misses the first turn and winds up at the second one. Mm-hmm. All right.
And related to that is the question of, for folks who are coming from Rosemary Street, they won't have the benefit of running into the parking lot before coming into Carrboro.
That's true.
So if there is some thinking behind that, I don't know what the solution might be. Perhaps a parking sign on this other corner.
That corner's
in Chapel Hill.
Another town.
Yeah, I do recognize what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So... For tonight, then, what?
Should we move that we refer the late sign for further discussion to the Appearance Commission?
And we ask the staff to bring us an amendment that would address this issue about the monument sign.
Yeah.
And we'll take this up.
And I guess, I'm sorry, there was an aesthetic point made by the Planning Board on the monument side. Is that something that the applicants considered?
What was their aesthetic?
Something point? About the way that the bottom is.
They didn't
shaped.
Like the geometry of it?
Yeah.
We will adjust.
If you could, yeah, with the Appearance Commission. That'd
Mr.
Be great.
Farmer says he's good at geometry. All right.
That's my sign name.
Your sign? He's got people who are good at geometry. Okay. All right. So I will take that as a motion from. From Jackie and seconded by Michelle to refer these matters to the Appearance Commission and town staff. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, that passes unanimously. I believe that is the end of our agenda. So, Jackie?
Just real quick. We had been having some discussions amongst ourselves, public discussions amongst ourselves about asking for a facilitated meeting to help deal with the issues surrounding Johnny's. I had suggested that we delay that until next week, the discussion, but then the person who I thought would want it delayed really doesn't. So I feel comfortable in our saying we can go ahead and start the mechanisms for setting up some facilitation between, especially since you said that both the neighbors and Johnny's are willing to enter into, or the neighbors are, you're going to check with Johnny's.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And see if we can move forward with that. The social worker caucus has been discussing this, and Michelle had suggested that next week's meeting, instead of discussing the particulars of Johnny's, either next week's meeting or some meeting in the future, we haven't talked about mediation facilitation in probably 20 years, so it might be worth having that. I don't mean to put words in your mouth.
No, it's fine.
Very unsocial work you've made to
it's
do
fine.
That. Yeah.
I just brought up that there are specific issues related to Johnny's that's being worked on, and that
right.
In general it seemed like we should discuss when community issues get to this level, what's the role of the board or the town staff in referring folks to the Dispute Settlement Center or some other alternative option to mediate before it comes before us in the public hearing?
We're going to take a shot at having it on at your next meeting.
Okay.
I think we could get
because one,
get it.
One of the differences is that when it is an issue that involves a zoning issue or formal action by this board, as opposed to just squabbling that hasn't come before us.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different way that we handle that, and we handle the facilitation, and we are part, as board members, we are part of that conversation as we work out the legislative solution to it. Is that right, Mike? It's been a while.
Well, there are a lot of issues that to be discussed and a lot of distinctions that have to be made, and I think certainly some guidelines as to when, you know, when we're talking about it's one thing to say we'll refer you, we advise, we recommend that you go see the folks at the Dispute Settlement Center. It's another thing to say that Carborough is funding and financing a mediator and totally establishing it up. And, and the circumstances under which you would do that, and the, it makes a big difference whether you're talking about the issue being the appropriate interpretation of the ordinance as to whether someone's in violation or whether the issue is whether a permit should be issued for pick your most recent controversial permit.
Right.
And, you know, and the role that mediation could play in those kinds of things is different and needs to be carefully considered. And you know, the precedent of I think you just have to think carefully about you know, how much the town wants to become involved in mediation, because you know, you could easily see mediation being a part of every all the public hearings you've had in the last 3 years.
No, but I think that with
I don't think you want to go there.
We the first time we did it was with Lake Hogan Farm.
That's right, and that was 20 years ago.
And more, Mike.
More.
It was more.
So, yeah.
Yeah. The trees are real big there now. but I think there are some things that just simply rise to that occasion, and public hearings are not always the most productive way to discuss things, because everybody stands up with their 3 minutes and they're going to make their point. And with something like Johnny's that has been bubbling for years, this is a way of helping us make a good decision.
Yeah, but I think the discussion is warranted, because like that, what happened 25 years ago was in the context of litigation, as I recall, which is wholly different than the context prior to the issuance of a permit, which makes a difference whether it's a conditional quasi-judicial thing or whether you're talking about a rezoning or whether you're just talking about, as I say, just, it's not to minimize it, but I mean whether the issue is simply the interpretation of whether an existing building or an existing business under an existing permit is operating within the limits of their permit. That's one thing, but you know, so it really is, it requires some thought.
Right.
And some guidelines, so that you don't, and unless the board wants to go in the direction of mediating virtually everything.
No, we don't
want
to do everything.
I don't think they want to do that, no.
Yeah.
I also think it's consistent with, and it came up earlier tonight, with Vision 2020, where it says the town should develop a process to mediate disagreements between developers and residents, that it's sort of in that spirit that we have some process, not that we're handling every mediation that comes up. We have some way that we offer mediation to folks when it makes sense for them to do that before they get to us. So.
Sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, Michelle made a point that I was going to make. I know that we referenced mediation in 2020, and I know that in this instance, it seems like mediation is something that the parties have already talked about. But I think my concern is, or my concerns are some of the concerns Mike just raised, that we need to set in, you know, have kind of an overall process by which we look at in what circumstances we offer mediation, because we might think that parties don't want mediation, but they might come to us and say, well, we think we should have it, so then how do we deal with that? You know, cost, when it happens, if the permit's already in the process, you know, right now, is it in the process right now? I mean, there's just a lot of, I think, good issues that come up with this that we need to address.
Okay.
I just wanted to quickly update y'all. I went to the League of Municipalities for our second issue that we addressed to them on the annual REHEG bill, and also the engagement by the League and through the Utilities Commission. It turns out that they are going to do a survey of members to see about taking on that aspect, because they've also heard from other municipalities the high rate hikes being an issue. And for the annual REHEG bill, they're going to study other legislation where it's already happened, such as in Florida and South Carolina. So it was good.
All right. Thanks, Sam. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Moved.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adjourned.
Sorry, you can hear me sniffling the whole time.
No, that's all right.